dice. So a die has six sides. Each one has a different number. And so the probability of each particular outcome is 1/6. And as you notice, if you add up all of these probabilities, the probability of getting a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5, 6, it's always going to add up to 1. So the probability of each particular event for one situation will always be adding up to 1. Okay. So in general, when we're defining the probability of a particular event, and my picture is blocking, but we define it as the total number of ways something can happen out of the total number of outcomes. So for a dice, we know that there are 6 possibilities. There are 6 sides of your die. And the probability of rolling a 4 is going to be 1/6, which is the same as the probability of rolling a 1 or rolling a 2. But say we were going to talk about the probability of rolling an even number. What would that be? Anybody? Yeah?
1/2.
1/2, why?
Because there's 6 and then there's 2 even machine odds.
6 and 3?
Yeah, there's six total and then there's 2 even machine
odds. Exactly. So there's 6 possible numbers total, and half of the numbers are even and half the numbers are odd. Right? So if we're talking about the probability of rolling even numbers, we have half. Probability of rolling odd numbers is half. We see that still is going to sum to 1. Okay. So now let's say you have 5 marbles in a bag. 4 of them are blue, and 1 is red. So what's the probability that you're going to pick a blue marble? Yeah?
4/5, because it would be the 4 divided by, or the number of possible outcomes divided by the number of total outcomes. So there would be 4 blue marbles and then 5 marbles altogether.
Exactly. And so the probability of that you'd pick a red one would be 1/5. Perfect. And again, that sums up to 1, which is perfect. Okay. So this is just being a little more specific. So for any event, your probability, you can think of it as a percentage or a fraction. It's always going to be somewhere between 0 and 1. And it's the likelihood that that particular event will occur. Okay, we have to remember, though, probability is just a guide. It's showing us what the likelihood of something will happen. It's not saying that's exactly what's going to happen. So if you toss a coin a certain number of times, it doesn't mean that exactly half of those times you're going to get heads, and exactly half of those times you're going to get tails. So it's really just a guide, and it's used in science and all in economics and all these other things to help us model reality, but it's not necessarily what our reality is. Okay, so we're going to go through some terminology and help us build up here. Probably shouldn't have put pizza, it's making us hungry, but anyway. Okay, so an experiment is an action where the result is uncertain. So you guys are probably familiar in your science classes. You talk about performing different experiments to determine what the outcome will be. So tossing a coin, throwing a dice, seeing what piece somebody's going to choose. These are all different types of experiments. Okay, then we talk about the sample space. And the sample space is the space of all the possible outcomes of an event. So for dice, we said that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those are all of our possible outcomes. For choosing a card and a deck, you know, you can have a 2 of clubs and a 3 of diamonds and a king of hearts and all these different possibilities. But we have to remember that the king, like, you can't just say king, right? Because there's king of hearts and king of diamonds and king of clubs. So those are 4 different possible outcomes. They're different things in our sample space. So in our sample space is made up of all these sample points. And so if we have the deck of cards, we have to say specifically 5 of clubs is going to be a sample point. You just can't say a 5, or you can't say clubs, right? Because each different thing in your sample space is a different sample point. Okay. So an event is a single result of your experiment. So if you're rolling a dice and you get a 5, 5 would be your event. Or if you're picking a card randomly from a deck and you get a king of clubs, the king of clubs would be an event. Or let's say you have a bag of marbles and you're picking out a marble. If you pick out a red marble, that's your event. Okay. All right, so getting a little bit more complicated. So we also talk sometimes about events being mutually exclusive. And that means you can't get both events at the same time. So I'm either going to raise my hand or I'm not, right? I can't be raising my hand and not raising my hand at the same time. So I would say that those two events are mutually exclusive. Okay, and other examples, if you're turning right or left, you can't turn both ways at the same time, right? Or if you're Zoolander, you can only always turn right. Okay, so also we often talk about the complement of an event. So if an event is we're going to flip a coin and it's going to land on heads, the complement of that would be landing on tails, right? It's the complement is always everything, all of the other possibilities, all of the other possible outcomes. So if we're talking about the days of the week, right, and we're saying that we go to school on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right? The complement of that would be Saturday and Sunday. So you're always looking at all of your possible outcomes, and the complement is always going to be everything that's not the particular event that you're talking about. Please stop me if you have any questions, by the way. Okay, so often we talk about the complement, we write that little C right after the A. Sometimes people use in a little apostrophe. I think the C is probably more common. But if you notice, when we're talking about probabilities, the probability of some event A, and when you add the probabilities of all the other things, so like the probability of an event and the probability of its complement is always going to add up to 1. And so that's kind of like what we were talking about before. If you're flipping a coin and it lands on heads, your probability of that is 1/2. And your complement is if it lands on tails, right? And the probability of that is also 1/2. And 1/2, 1/2, that's equal to 1. Okay. Okay, so events are either going to be independent or dependent. And events are called independent if one is not affected by the other. So let's say we're doing some sort of experiment where we're going to flip our coin like 50 times, right? Whatever happens the first time we flip it has nothing to do with the second time we flip it, right? It's like you're restarting this event. But let's say instead I had like a deck of cards and I wanted you to pick 2, right? If you pick your first one, let's say it's a king of hearts or something. If you pick out a king of hearts, and then I have you pick out a second one, right? Those events aren't independent because you can't pick out the king of hearts again because you've already picked it out. So events that are independent are ones that don't affect each other at all. So those are ones where you're flipping a coin, or I guess when your cards, if I had you pick out a card and then put it back in, then it's like you're starting over again, right? So events are only going to be independent if they don't affect each other. Okay. Yeah, so events are dependent when they are affected by previous events. So if I had like a bag of marbles and I was having you pick out one marble after another, those are going to affect each other, right? Or if you had a deck of cards, or if any sort of sequential events where once you make a decision and you don't have that sort of replacement, those are going to be dependent events. So the key is to ask yourself if your second event is affected by your first one. Sometimes that can get a little tricky. Okay, so when we're talking about probabilities and we're trying to find the probability of 2 events or 3 events or so on events happening at the same time, it's really important to ask ourselves if the events are independent or not. So if your events are independent, and you want to find the probability of both of them happening, you can take the probabilities of each one and simply multiply them together. So for example, if we're finding the probability of flipping a coin, we're finding the probability of having 7 heads in a row. You simply take the probability of having heads, which is 1/2, and you just keep multiplying them, right? So that probability is really small. It's almost never going to happen. But again, we have to remember, this is just telling us the likelihood, right? It could actually end up that we might get 7 heads in a row more often than that, or less often than that. Okay. So, to try to build up to what our formula is going to be when events are dependent, let's take a look at a marble example. So, let's say we have a bag of marbles that has 3 red marbles and 2 blue marbles in it. Okay. So, the probability of picking out a blue marble first, since there's 2 marbles, 2 blue ones, and 5 total, that's going to be 2/5. And the probability of picking out a red one will be 3/5, right? But now that you've picked out those marbles, your sample space is changing, right? After your first event of picking out a marble, you've now been reduced to 4 marbles. So let's say that we've picked out our blue marble first. Now we're left in the sample space of having 3 red marbles and 1 blue marble. So your probability of picking out a blue one at that point is now 1/4, right? It's no longer 2/5 because your sample space is different. So in order to find the total probability of getting 2 marbles, you're going to have to multiply those 2 probabilities together, right? And can everybody see why this is different from independent? Independent, we would have said, you know, you just multiply the probabilities together, right? But the probability of picking a blue marble out at the beginning and picking a blue marble out after you've already picked out a marble are going to be different. And so that's the important key here, is that our 1/4, that 1/4 probability at the top, is saying how likely is it for me to pick out a blue marble after I've already picked out a blue marble. So it's the probability that you're picking that your second marble is blue, given that the first marble that you picked out was blue. And making these tree diagrams is very helpful, especially when your sample space is a lot larger or you're collecting or conducting a lot more experiments or having a lot more events sequentially. Okay, so just to go through this a little bit more carefully so that we're making sure we're on the same page. So we know if we have those 3 red marbles and 2 blue marbles, the first time that we're picking out a marble, our probability of getting a blue one is going to be 2/5, right? Okay. And so if we're calling event B, often we give events names. We just say A or B. It makes it a lot easier when you're writing out these formulas to say P of A instead of saying, what's the probability that I'm going to get a blue marble in my first turn, right? Okay, so we first picked out a blue marble that had a probability of 2/5 of chance of happening. And our second event is that we're going to get a second marble. So we have to consider both cases, right? We have to consider the case that the first marble that we picked out was blue, and the case that our first marble that we picked out was red, right? So we had to go back to that tree diagram. Maybe we can look at that for a second. We can see that so we went through the first case. So the second case, if we had first picked out a red marble, right, then our sample space decreases to having 2 blue and 2 red. So now our chance of picking a blue marble is going to be 50-50. So it's going to be half. Okay. All right. So when we're talking about the probability of these dependent events, both of them happening, we use this little line. So we say the probability that event B is going to happen given that event A happened. So for us, that's kind of what we were saying here. We are figuring out the probability that your second marble is going to be blue given that your first marble was blue. Right? Okay. And so we figured out that that was 1/4, right? If we first picked out a blue one, then we got down to the sample space of having 3 red marbles and 1 blue marble. And so that probability of our second one being blue was 1/4. Okay, so using this event B given event A probability, that's called conditional probability. And again, it's used for these dependent events. It's very important that we make sure we determine which case we're in. Okay, so the formula, when we're figuring out the probability of event A and event B happening, we first figure out the probability of event A, so our first event. So in our example, that was the probability that we're first going to be picking out a blue marble. And then we multiply that by the probability that our second event is going to be happening, given that our first event was happening. So for us, in our marble case, that's exactly what we did here, right? The probability that event A is going to happen, so that we're going to first draw our first blue marble, was 2/5, right? And the next probability, so the 1/4 at the very top, that's the probability that our second marble will be blue, given that our first marble that we picked out was blue. Does everybody see that? Yeah? Okay. So we simply multiplied those two together, and we determined that our probability that both our first and our second marble is going to be 1/10. Okay? And so you can kind of go through the tree and figure out all the different probabilities. So the probability that your first marble is going to be blue and your second one's going to be red, you multiply those guys together. Right? And so the important thing to keep in mind here is that because these events are dependent, we're not doing any sort of replacement. We have to make sure that we're keeping track of how our sample space is changing. Okay? And this is really going to affect the likelihood of your outcomes. Okay. So it's often very helpful when we're doing different sorts of problems. It might be easier for us to know the probability that both things will happen and the probability that one will happen. And so we can use that to determine the probability that B will happen given A. Right? So there's different cases where it might be easier to determine certain probabilities, and we can use this formula in lots of different ways. Okay. All right. So we're going to start working on these worksheets that I gave you guys. The idea here is just to build up our conditional probability skills, and hopefully it'll help us with our awesome Monty Hall problem that we're going to be working on. So try to work on these. Feel free to work on them together. Some of the problems are pretty tricky, and we're going to see how we do, and then we're going to come together and talk about some of them. I know, there are 12. There's lots of problems.
You're putting graduate school pressure on them.
Some of them are tricky. Huh?
How long are we going to have on these?
Like 20 minutes, so you'll have a while. Yeah. If you can't finish all the problems, don't worry. Thank you. How are you guys doing? You're good? Crazy algebra.
I don't know.
Oh, that looks awesome though. So you figured out which one of those each one is?
Well, so this one would be the first chance, and this is like the final PB given to it. So like this one's to studies, this would be the passing test. And this,
so which one are you trying to solve for? B given A or A and B?
I don't know.
Okay, so let's see. So what's the last question?
Find the probability that she passed her mathematics test given that she studied.
Given. So the hint here is that it has given, right?
Yeah, so I know that she passed, so I have her here.
Okay.
And then I don't know what the chance is that she's going to test, she passed. So this is that she passes and studies.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Nice.
So if I do that and I multiply 5 by 6 fifteenths, then the
answer is now I have to do some simplification, huh? Awesome, sweet. You got it. 68 over 75.
So you have to study because
nice. How are you guys doing?
I think they need help.
Yeah? All right.
Okay. So I think it's the end of the first one.
Yeah? Why is that?
Because it's saying that it's dependent that she studies and passes, so then she's not gonna do well on the test she needs to study.
Awesome, perfect. Exactly, so that means that we can use this formula, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so which one are we solving for? Which one of those three probabilities?
Up there?
Yeah. The
B
A.
Given A.
B given A, perfect, right? So we have to set up that equation. So what is the probability of A and B? That she'll study and she'll pass her test.
So probably B given
A. What do we have? Okay.
Okay, so first we have to find the probability of A and B, right? Which one is that?
That is...
that she'll study and she'll pass her test.
17 over
20. 17 over 20, awesome. So we take that and we have to divide it by the probability that A will happen. So the probability that she's going to study. 15 over 16. So you have to divide those two numbers.
Okay, 17 over 20 divided by 15.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, and have you learned the rule when you're dividing by something, it's the same as multiplying by...
No.
No? Okay. So when you divide by a number, it's the same as multiplying by its reciprocal. And its reciprocal is just when you flip it.
Yeah, so 16.
Yeah, so we can really say that we're going to be multiplying by 16 over 15.
Yeah.
Awesome.
20 times 15 is 17.
Exactly.
So, the reason that...
Man, you're fast.
Okay.
There's a very high chance.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is just looking at the formula and applying the formula.
Uh-huh.
Does it make sense?
Right. That's very important.
That's what I'm trying to make it make. Okay.
Yes, it's the probability thing.
Awesome.
Okay, nice.
Exactly.
Nice.
Okay.
So you can... can try simplifying that a little bit. Wait, what's half of 36?
Wait.
Half of 36. Do that again?
Half of 36 is... Wait, it's... Half of 36 is...
You know, Nicholas?
So half of 30 is 15. And half of 6
is 18.
Is 3, so 18. And eight, half of 100 is 50, right?
Uh-huh.
So 50 plus 18.
78. Wait, no, 68.
68. Perfect. Awesome. Nice.
So then when you simplify that fracture,
how are you doing? You're just blowing through these? Like a piece of cake?
So he said 3/4 is the numerator and the denominator is...
Nice. How did you do on these guys? Oh, okay. Do you want to talk about any of them?
No.
No? Okay. How are you doing?
Good. I answered the first question.
Oh, awesome. Nice. So we're doing, working on the third one now? What if I look at it with you?
How many quarters do you have? So, the probability. Okay, so this is the both one, so it would be 0.4/6.
Perfect.
Or 4/6, I guess.
Yeah. Perfect. Nice.
So this is independent.
That's independent, right?
Yeah, so that would be 1/4.
So if you were finding the probability that you're going to get, that you're... penny is going to get heads and that your nickel is going to get heads, then you would multiply those together, right? Then you would multiply half by half and get 1/4, right? But this is asking, find the probability that the penny will be on heads given that the nickel has heads, right? But, So our first event, event A, is that our nickel landed on heads, right? So that's happened. We flipped our nickel and it landed on heads. And our second event, or event B, is that our penny lands on heads, right? So does the fact that does the fact that the penny landed on heads has anything to do with the nickel landing on heads?
I wouldn't think so.
Right, it doesn't. They're totally independent. So do you think that... So if we're finding the probability of B given A, right? Then because the given thing has nothing to do with the first thing, that's really going to be the same thing as just finding out the probability that the first thing's going to happen.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah?
So it's not the probability of them both happening, it's the probability of one of them happening.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes
sense.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Find right? So the way that I would think about this is I would say this is my
How are you guys doing? Whipping these out?
Yeah, we can ask.
Yeah?
So how do we do
that? If we were determining that there were, how many are both boys? And I was thinking that it would be like one third because technically you would have a boy and a girl and a girl and a girl and a boy and a boy. But then you could also assume that there would be like a boy one and a girl one and a boy.
Oh, like you're assuming which one came first.
Right, so how do you get across to the point that there's actually four possible outcomes and not just three?
Okay, so
well, I guess technically because they could be either gender, it doesn't matter which age. So let's
just, yeah.
If you had, you know, a million families, you expect half of them to have one boy and one girl. You don't expect a third of them, right?
Well, no. No.
That this one gave me problems too when I was doing it. I decided to put it on the worksheet anyway. Yeah, talk this out with us. Talk this out with us. Okay.
So, like, see, you had so in public school, you assume that there are two more. So, then it could be a boy and a girl and a girl and a boy. But say you have like a boy, one and a girl, two,
so it's like, do you have four possible outcomes or three possible outcomes? Do you consider...
Wait, if they're going to choose... So they're going to choose two children at random from like all families with two children. So you could get... I mean, this is what we're doing right here. Like two boys, two girls, or... we have to consider that getting a boy and then a girl is the same as getting a girl and then a boy.
I think those have to be the same because... We have to assume that because we're just considering the gender. We're not considering the order of it happening. Yeah.
So I think this would be the total, like, space.
So there'd be three different options.
Yeah. I'm still kind of caught up on what you're getting at.
Like, the boy have to work.
What do you think the order in which they come?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In order to increase your number of possible outcomes.
I'm not too sure if that would have, that would be, like,
Sarah.
Yeah.
Do you mean there is at least a boy, or there's exactly
it's more,
a boy?
More concerned with the gender that they're
that they're.
I think you mean there is at least a boy.
Yeah, what, at least
sense,
a boy.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that question doesn't affect this.
Well, so technically,
just be one. It would be one in. That both children are boys. I think it would be one in three. It would be one in three.
Well, but the given that there's a
but it's
boy,
given that there's a boy in the family.
Two thirds, two times one, and then a because given that there is a boy, the probability of a boy in the family is two-thirds.
So two-thirds is equal to...
Two-thirds, and then times one-third, because it would be this, and then you get two-ninths.
Well, is that what it's asking, or is it the probability that both children are boys? Given that there's a boy in the family. So your sample size is actually just this, or the family's at this, or this.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So in that case, if you took all the families,
that's hard.
That, is it one half?
But the sample size is still 2/3, because you still have this when you're getting the probability of that. And that there's boys in a family is 2/3 in terms of this, and then it would be 1/2, so it'd be 2/3 times 1/2, and then you cancel these, so you get 1/3, so you get 2/2.
Wait, say that one again. I think that sounded
so like
good.
With one of these, you'd have, given that there's avoidant families, two, the probability would be 2/3, right?
Right.
So then after that, we can eliminate those, and then we would get the avoidant girl and or the avoidant boy. And so then we'd have 1/2, and then we multiply 2/3 by 1/2, and we'd get 1/3.
We're multiplying them?
Well, yeah, because the second probability is based on the fact that there is the first probability.
Well, maybe we should just go.
One third.
There's more.
Do we have any more of those worksheets?
I don't know. I knew I should have taken that one off. I don't know about number 7.
You don't know about number 7? One third.
How did you get it? One third,
yeah. So, the probability of both children is 1/4, right? Both children and boys are 1/4.
So you're considering boy and girl and girl and boy as two different things?
No. Yes, because they're independent events. We consider them to be independent events. Right. Having this child being a boy or this child being a girl, they're independent events.
Okay.
So this is a boy's 1/2, this is a boy's 1/2. If both need to be boys, you do 1/2 times 1/2.
Okay.
Okay. There is at least a boy in this family, it'll be 1 minus 1/4, because you just have to do the complement, which is say both are girls, then it's 1/4.
If both are girls,
it's 1/4. Just
okay.
Like they're both boys.
Right.
So the complement is, you know, there's at least a boy.
Right.
Which is 3/4. If you have 1/4 over 3/4, you have 1/3.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, this is a problem that gave me undergraduate probability class.
That's hard. Okay.
There's an interesting formation of this problem, which says if you open a door, you know this family has like 2 kids. If you open a door, you see a boy. What's the chance that both of them are boys?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, guys, I did some discussing. Okay, so we know that the events, your first child and your second child, those are independent events, right? So the probability, so for first, find the probability that A and B is going to happen. So the probability that both of your children are going to be boys, right? The probability that your first child is a boy is 1/2, right? The probability that your second child is a boy is also 1/2. So you multiply those together, and you get 1/4. So your probability that both of your children are going to be boys is going to be 1/4. Right? Okay. So now we have to divide that by the probability that there's a boy in your family. Right? What?
So this conditional probability is like a fake one. It doesn't matter what the nickel is.
Okay. So to find the probability that at least one of them is going to be a boy, right? It might be a little bit easier to do it the complement way. So the complement of having at least one boy is all girls, which is also 1/4. And so 1 minus 1/4 is 3/4. So the probability of having at least one boy is 3/4. So we take 1/4 and we divide it by 3/4, and we get 1/3, which is exactly right. Yeah. Well, right.
Yeah. So you can do it two different ways.
But that all that, yeah. That then takes into account the fact that your possible outcomes distinguish between boy girl versus girl boy.
Yes.
yeah.
are going to be different.
And I've, unless you think of the birth order part of it, that it doesn't jump out at you
when you're thinking about it this way.
The possible outcomes, you either have one of each or both.
Right. Yeah.
So how do you make the leap of understanding to say, oh, I actually have to consider the birth order?
I think it goes back to thinking about that there's two separate events and that they're independent of each other. And so, because of that, it's going to matter. The order of the events matters. So, like...
Yeah, I sort of know that intuitively. I'm just trying to think, how do I get in my head that I need to think of that kind of thing?
Right. When you're talking about the probability that both of them are boys.
In terms of gender, though, like, no matter which kind of character, you're still, like, a girl, even if you're
a girl. Right, and I think it's because when we're thinking about it this way, we're thinking about it as being one event, as opposed to two separate events.
But we need to think
of it. But we need to think of it as two separate events. I think that's why. Yeah, that's hard. It's only going to get harder.
Yeah, I know. And going back to the two blue marbles, the dependent selection of two blue in a row,
mm-hmm.
you come out with 1/10, and then I was thinking, okay, what's the interpretation of 1/10? That if you take a bag of 5 marbles with 3 red and 2 blue, drawing 2 marbles out of that bag sequentially 10 times, you expect only one time to get 2 blues in a row? In other words,
yeah.
What exactly is your experiment in that case? And I guess it's start with a bag of 5 and draw 2 marbles out.
Yeah.
And then keep doing that. And then
so one event is take one out, take another one out. So that's one thing. Then
right.
you put it back in, then take one, take another one out.
Right.
Yeah. So if you took 2 out, did that process 10 times,
mm-hmm.
one time, you should have, both of them should be blues.
Right. And I guess, a different number of times you'll have 2 reds. What's interesting, though, is that sort of says that the resolution of your experiments is 1/10, but there's things that won't occur 2/10 of the time.
Yeah, because like either you're going to get a red and a blue and a red, blue and a blue. So there's like 4 different possibilities.
Right.
But
some of those happen more frequently than others.
And it's because there's 3 red and 2 blue in there, right? So we're thinking the possibilities, like there's only 4 possibilities.
Right,
but
there's not possibilities.
Right, yeah. But there's 5 marbles. So if you think of each marble as being like something that's different, even though there's only red and blue, there's really 5 different things in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what makes it seem weird. Because like... Even though there's only 2 different options of what color to pick out, there's lots of different options of which marble you're picking out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's always been confusing to me, is the... when you count them as individuals and when you count them as part of the group.
Right, yeah.
Oh, well.
And sometimes I feel like you can word a question differently and you mean a different thing, too.
Yes, right, exactly. So, it's important to be clear on what it is you're defining, what your experiment is.
Exactly, yeah.
Just as confusing.
It's the hardest part about math, being very clear about what you're actually doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
all right. Alrighty, guys, so I put up the answers here so you can check your work. I found that number 7 was one of the trickiest ones, so maybe we can talk about that and then we can have a quick break. Okay, so number 7, can somebody read me what the question is? Yeah?
A family that is known to have 2 children is selected at random from amongst all families with 2 children. Find the probability that both children are boys, given that there is a boy in this family.
Okay, so our event A is going to be what then? So, what is the actual event? Can you define it? Oh, thank you.
That both are boys. Or like, event A would be that there's one boy.
That there's at least one boy. So, event A is that there is at least one boy. Okay. So, I think the best way to do this, so when we're having the event of having a child, right, are those dependent or independent? Independent. Why are they independent? Yeah?
Just because you had a girl doesn't mean that you'd have a boy.
Exactly. So just because you had a girl first or you had a boy first, that has nothing to do with what your second child's going to be, right? So if... Let's say our, so the probability that our first child, what am I doing? So we're determining the probability that there's at least one boy.
Well, you're trying to define all the possible.
We're trying to define all of our possible outcomes, right? So we kind of have to look at these guys as 2 separate events. So our first event, we can either have a boy or a girl. And our second event, we can again either have a boy or a girl, right? So how many possible outcomes really are there?
4.
There's really 4, right? So it might be confusing when you're thinking about this, having a boy and then a girl or a girl and then a boy. You might think of that as one event because it's still one of each gender. But because we're looking at these as 2 separate events in a way, like first you're having one child, then you're having your next child, you have to consider them as 2 different possibilities. Right? So your sample space is either going to be boy, boy, girl, girl, boy, girl, or girl, boy. And so we have to make sure that we're considering these 2 separate events. So that means that our probability of having, so our P of A is going to be what? So our probability that there's at least one boy.
3/4,
right? Because we have at least one boy in 3 of our 4 possible outcomes. Okay. And our, what was our event B? Our event B was having 2 boys? Okay, so having 2 boys. And we know the probability of that happening is what?
1/4.
That's just 1/4. Okay. And then we have to talk about the probability of B given A, right? So the probability that we're going to have 2 boys given that we already have 1 boy in our family. Right? Does everybody see that that's also equal to the probability that we're going to have 2 boys? Yeah, because if you already have... did I say that right? I didn't, did I? Right, so that's what we're looking for. Sorry, we're looking for P of B given A. And we're taking P of A and B, my bad, and dividing it by P of A. So to find this, the last thing we had to find was P of A and B. Right, sorry, I said that wrong. So the probability that we're having 2 boys and that one of them is a boy, that's what's equal to the probability of both of them being boys. Right? Okay, sorry. And that probability is... what? What's the probability that both of them are going to be boys? 1/4, right? Because that only happens 1 out of 4 total possible times. So the probability that there's going to be at least one boy and that 2 of them are going to be boys is 1/4. And the probability that there's at least one boy is going to be 3/4. So we divide both of those and we get 1/3. Right? Sorry, said that a little confusing, but we have to keep in mind the trickiest part is realizing that boy-girl and girl-boy are two different events. Right? Okay. All right, did I confuse anybody too much?
That P of B, you said that should have been P of A and B, right?
Yeah, because it's the same. If you only have two children, you have at least one boy. You have at least, you have two boys, it's the same as you have at least one boy, right? They combine into one, in a sense.
Yeah, so I guess the point I was trying to make is that we're trying to find the probability that B and A will happen, right?
Yeah.
But because the probability of having two boys, that already includes, like, you're already going to have at least one boy, right? So probability of A and B is the same as probability of B. Okay. Yeah? All right, how about we take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back, and we can work on our exciting game show problem. And hopefully we've got our conditional probability skills built.
That's okay. It's not a big deal.
Oops.
These things can be very confusing.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta leave now. I have some tutoring to do.
Okay. Ooh, who are you tutoring?
High school kid.
Nice.
Yeah, these kids are much smarter.
Yeah, they are.
Smart. Yes.
They're really smart.
Good luck.
Okay, I'll let you know about the last one.
Yes, I will try to use Waffle Math to see if I can get a result.
Okay.
And try to see if I go back.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
Text me.
Okay, I will.
Wait, okay, so then I feel like I was the bad person, because like, I thought it doesn't matter, like, BG getting a boy girl or a girl boy, like, both of those are like the same thing. But they aren't the same. Like, they're separate events.
They're separate events, yeah, because...
right, because that's where we were...
That's where we were having that problem.
So I kind of found a shortcut way. Can I borrow this
plan? Yeah, of course.
Okay. So, like, say you had... So say, like, the gender was the same, but, like, the different possible events weren't. So you had... So the different possibilities would be a boy-girl, and then a girl-girl, and then a boy and a boy. And so
okay.
If you took, so first to find the probability that there's a boy in this family would be 2 out of 3, right? So
right.
It would be 2/3. So it would be 2/3. And then afterwards we can, so because these are two dependent events, given that there's a boy in the family, you can eliminate this because there is no boy in this family. So then
right.
You'd have B, G, and B, B. And so the probability that there are two boys in the family is 1/2. So then you multiply this first probability by the second probability, and then these would cancel, and you get 1/3.
Okay.
So
that should work too, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not like a... I feel like with these things, sometimes you can do something wrong and still get the right answer. But that seems, that's the part that's tricky. But this seems right, right?
Yeah.
If you're looking at...
Wait, so here, teach me that again. What did you do?
So if you had a boy and a girl...
So, because we're trying to find the probability that both children are boys, given that we already have one boy in the family. Okay.
So
the
we need
sample
to find
space...
The two problems.
So the sample space for the boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you wrote down.
So they're going
So you're doing it like the marble thing, like you're considering...
Yeah. Like they're going to change based on the fact that this first probability is that first probability.
Right.
Like...
Okay, so you're assuming that they're like sequential events in a way. Like first, the first one is you only have
there is
a boy. All right, so that's the introduction to our Monty Hall problem. This was actually done in a game show back in the day called Let's Make a Deal. And what I want you guys to do now is to get in groups of two and to play this game with each other. So in your group of two, I want one person to always switch. So what you're going to do first, so you're going to get your three note cards. You're going to draw your pictures on them. So one's going to be a car, and the other two are going to be goats. Okay? And then what you're going to do is you're going to play this game with each other. So one person is always going to switch, and one person is always going to stay the same. So try to play 25 games each. So one person is going to turn the cards over, mess with them, but like know where the two goats are. Have the other person choose one card. Then they're going to show you one of the goats. And then if you're the person who stays, you're going to stay and flip that card over. Or if you're the person who switches, you're going to choose the other one and flip that over. And so, have you guys given the tally sheets? Did we pass those out? So we're going to pass out tally worksheets for you guys to keep track of how many times you win when you're swapping and how many times you win if you're staying the same. So try to work on that, and afterwards try to see if this makes sense. Maybe try to figure it out using probabilities. Think about the conditional probabilities we're just doing, and then we'll talk about it. Okay. We're going to pass them out in a sec.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all good.
Good.
Yeah, just getting cold.
Good.
Explain that decently enough. All right.
Playing with each other.
I know. Yeah. If they seem bored, you can try to ask them to figure it out with their conditional probability. How's it going? You guys play a bunch of games? Do you get bored of it?
We figured it out.
You figured it out? How?
It's always switch.
Always switch? Why?
Since if you select a goat, then the game show is forced to reveal another goat. And since there are two goats in one car, there's a higher probability of the game show host being forced to reveal a goat.
If what?
So if I selected a goat, the game show host is forced to reveal the other goat because you couldn't open the door to the car, right?
Right.
So, and since there are two goats, the probability of the game show host being forced to reveal another goat is 2/3, right?
Well, the game show host is always going to reveal the goat.
Yeah. The game show host is always going to reveal the goat. So if I select a goat, then he'll always reveal the goat. And since there are two goats, that means that 2/3 of the time I'll win if I switch.
So, right, because the only time, so because if you switch, if you first chose the car, then he would have two possible doors to open.
And, but the probability of you choosing the car is 1/3.
So you're saying that because if you choose a goat, which is more likely to happen, the game show host is forced to only open, he only has one possible door to open. So that would mean that if you switch, you're always going to win.
You're more likely to imagine.
So if you chose a goat, you're always going to win if you switch. Right? If the first door that you chose was a goat, you're always going to win if you switch. And if the first door that you chose is a car, you're going to lose if you switch. So that means the probability that you switch and you're going to win is going to be 2/3, because that's the same probability as you choosing a goat in the first place. Awesome. Nice. That was fast. Good job. See, now if you want an extra challenge, see if you can try to figure it out using conditional probabilities. See if you can construct some sort of set of events, A and B, and you can use A given B or B given A in two different events. How are you guys doing?
Good. Okay.
That's a good point.
I figured it out.
You did? What?
We were like doing it, and I was like, I keep getting something that's like contradicting what I think, but I think it's a better chance if you switch.
Why?
Because when you stay, it's gonna still be a 1/3 chance because you chose it, and even if you chose you won, you're still staying with it.
You're still staying with your same choice.
Well, for him, when you switch, you choose one, he shows you one that's not a goat, and so you, out of two of them, you're choosing which one's the car, so that means you have the
So that's where it's a little tricky. So
that's what I'm thinking.
So you're right in that if you switch, you're going to have a higher probability of winning.
But I
think your reasoning is good, but determining the actual probabilities is where it gets a little bit tricky. So So we know that if we choose a goat first, that if we switch, we're always going to win, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we choose a goat first, the game show host has to open this door no matter what, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So, or if we choose this one, he has to open this one. Mm-hmm. So if we choose a goat and we say we're going to switch, we're always going to win, right? So that means that the probability of us winning is going to be the same as the probability of us choosing a goat. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Which is
2/3. So if we always switch, the probability of us winning is 2/3, because that's the probability of us choosing a goat. Right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Exactly. Your reasoning was perfect. Yeah, it's just the numbers make it a little tricky. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah?
I don't know. Some people are.
Okay. 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 Then I'll start saying something in a minute.
I don't know if it's a good reason, but we had an answer. So
yeah?
We think, although our like results show that we had a higher probability we switched, I'm thinking that it's going to be about the same, if not maybe just like a little bit higher, is because if you originally, you have a 1 in 3 chance of getting a car in the first, like if you just pick whatever, and then he takes out one, which is a goat, so meaning the other one could be a goat, or what you're on is a goat. But that means you have a 50% chance of being right or wrong, so it like wouldn't really change.
You have a what percent chance of being?
You have a 50% chance of winning or being wrong if you switch. So it wouldn't really change it because
the probabilities are the same, right, whether we switch or not.
Because if you switch, you have a 50% chance of being right,
like a,
but also
then it becomes
wrong.
Like a toss-up coin, right?
But so I think, so this is the probability of the whole like independent-dependent event thing. That's where this comes in. So if you treated it as a new event, right, if you treated it as independent, then yes, your second thing would be, well, now you only have two chances, so it's 50-50. But the thing is that the events are not independent. They're dependent. So the fact that you're making some choice at the beginning is affecting your probability afterwards.
Oh, because he's always opening the door?
Yeah, because...
One of the goats is open.
Because he can't open the door that you chose.
So if you chose a goat... And then you switch you up, and if you chose a goat, and then he opened the door of the goat, then you, if you switched, you have 100% chance of winning.
Right.
But if you picked a car in the beginning, and then he opened the goat, and then you changed, you would always lose.
Right. So if you're switching, you're always going to lose if you choose a car, and you're always going to win if you choose a goat. Right? So the probability of you choosing a goat is 2/3, right? So if you switch, you're always going to win 2/3 of the time.
Yeah.
And if you don't switch, you're always going to lose... Or if you switch, you're going to lose 1/3 of the time, because if you pick the car. Yeah.
So it's like higher.
Yeah, exactly. Oops, sorry. Alrighty, guys, how's it going? What's happening with your guys' games? You keep losing? Everybody's just losing?
Yep.
Yeah? Switching? Are the switchers winning more often?
Yes.
Yes? Did you guys think about why that might make sense?
Yes.
Yes? Does anybody have a good explanation for me? Yeah?
Yeah, because if you switch, you have 2/3 of the probability to win, because it goes and so you can switch. And then...
Right, so if we assume that we're always switching, we know that if our first choice was a goat, we're always going to win, because if our first choice is a goat, it forces the game show host to open a goat, which means that the only option to switch to is a car. So if we're always switching, if our first choice was a goat, we're always going to win. If our first choice was a car, switching, we're always going to lose. But what's the probability of us picking a goat the first time? 2/3, right? Because there's 2 goats and 3 options. So that means that our probability of choosing a goat first is 2/3, and that's equal to our probability of winning if we switch. And so that's why switching is going to give us a higher probability. So if you guys are ever in a game show, you know what to do, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
My car can kind of have different pieces, like specific pieces for one form
of
like this.
What?
Goats look the same.
Ah, so cheating. It's okay, these doors are all going to be the same. You're not going to know what's going on. Alrighty, so let's listen to him and give us a wonderful explanation, because it's entertaining.
So, what do you think? Now, most people will say that it makes no difference whether you swap or not. Behind one closed door is a goat, and behind the other closed door is the car. Therefore, the chances of choosing the car are 50-50. So it makes no difference whether you swap or not. Now this sounds perfectly sensible. However, it's not correct. The Monty Hall problem is a puzzle about probability. The problem is simple to understand, but the answer is counterintuitive. So what should you do? The answer is you should always swap, as this gives twice the chance of winning the car. Why? Well, there are many different ways to explain why, but perhaps the easiest is to examine what your chances of winning the car are for the two strategies, swapping and not swapping. Let's start by looking at what happens if you choose not to swap. At the start of the game, you are asked to pick a door. Since there are three doors and only one hides the car, the probability of you picking the car is 1 in 3, or about 33%. And since there are two goats, the probability of you picking a goat is 2 in 3, or about 66%. Now if you don't swap your door, it doesn't matter which other goat door the host opens, because you're sticking with your first choice, and the chance that you've already picked the car is 33%, and the chance that you've already picked a goat is 66%. So by not swapping, you have a 33% chance of winning the car, and a 66% chance of winning a goat. Now, let's look at the consequences of swapping. Let's consider what happens if, by luck, you pick the car first time, a 33% chance. It's obvious that if you pick the car on your first go and then swap, you are going to end up with a goat. So if you swap, you're going to win a goat at least 33% of the time. What about if you pick a goat first time? Well, here is the crux of the problem. This time, there is only one goat the host can reveal. The host opens the only other goat door, and then you swap to the remaining closed door, the car. In fact, every time you pick a goat door first time, and then swap, you will win the car. And the chances of you picking a goat first time are 66%. So by swapping, you have a 33% chance of winning a goat by picking the car first time, and a 66% chance of winning the car by picking a goat first time. So, you should always swap to the remaining door. Why? Because if you do, you'll have a 66% chance of winning the car, and only a 33% chance if you don't. And that is double the chance. I hope this explanation makes sense, and that you can see the truth behind the Monty Hall problem. The only remaining question is, do you actually want to win a car? Or would you rather win a goat?
Alrighty guys, so we've now seen game show, you always want to be swapping, yeah?
Isn't the crux of this the fact that because he won't open the door that you chose, he turns it from an independent selection to a dependent problem?
Exactly. Yeah, if he was allowed to open the door that you chose, it would be a completely different game. Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. So, how about now I challenge you guys to try to figure this out using conditional probabilities. So, see if you can come up with an event A and event B. Find some probability of B given A and use the formulas that we're using before. And also, I think I love that idea, try thinking about why it would be different if the game show host was allowed to open the door that you chose. All right? Then we'll talk about it.
I've heard of that game, but I didn't know it was called that.
Monty Hall?
Best possible ending to that video.
Two goats.
It was. Yeah, I like it.
Also, nobody minds if it ends early.
You what?
Nobody minds if it ends early.
Okay.
That's
something
that happens
to them. So okay. I was like, Okay. You guys have any ideas?
Yeah,
I can do it.
Yeah, definitely. It's an awesome thing to do. How are you guys doing?
Check it out.
Good?
Nice.
How are you guys doing?
Oh, well, I was trying to explain my
You're doing well? Yeah?
No, actually I'm not.
You're not?
I was going to do my event A was going to be the chance you switch, and event B is going to be the chance you win, but the probability that you switch and the probability that you stay are equal, so you can't do it that way.
Right, you're right. Yep, you can't do it that way.
If I switch the events? No, because I still have the same problem.
You might want to use for your events, like the probability that you'll choose a goat door first, or the probability that given that you choose a goat door, you're going to get the car door, something to deal with the goats and the cars.
Oh.
Yeah?
How about we have the... You can't have a goat door and a car door because they're the problems.
Right.
Going to give us very
important. So maybe one would be the probability that you first choose a goat door, and maybe the second one could be the probability that you're going to get the car if you switch. Something like that. Something to do with one event being the first thing that you choose.
A equals first goat, and B
one thing we learned is that
the line is that your final is the car.
Awesome.
So the probability that your first goat and final is the car is 2/3 times 1/3 2/9 divide that by the probability that you first chose to go, which is 2/3 to 40. The probability that your second will be a car, given your first is a goat.
I started doing that.
Is just
first thing I demonstrated is
one
value and its actual
third
distribution.
Wait,
keep getting the opposite of what I know is true.
Right. So the probability that your first.
What if I switch the event? Wait, probability of B. I'm looking for probability
of B given A.
Yeah, so that's the probability that your final is a car given your first is a goat. So it's basically saying that that's a 1/3 chance that you switched.
Because your first can't be a goat, and then you stay the same, and then your second is a car. What if your first is a goat, and your second is that there's a car somewhere along the way?
So, okay, I think we're mixing this up. So, the probability that our, if we're assuming that we're switching,
the probability that you'll eventually get a car.
So wait, so for this first one, explain to me what the two-thirds and the one-thirds are.
That's just multiplying it out to find a probability of A and B.
Okay.
But that's not how you find probability of A and B.
Right, if they're dependent.
So I've been doing this all along. But then how do I find the probability of A and B if I'd have to use the same equation?
So tricky. You found your answer? How?
This is Donna Bonds' number gives 1 divided by 2 number gives 4. I only played 1.
So you played 5 times? Okay, maybe we should go over this. Okay, let's. Alrighty, guys. So let's look how we can do this with conditional probability. Alright, so what we did is we divided it up into 3 different cases, right? So in all of these, we're assuming that we're picking door number 1. So case 1 is, and case 2, we're both picking a donkey, and case 3, we're picking the car, right? So we know that in case 1, if we're picking a donkey, that the host has to open door number 2. And in case 2, if we're choosing the donkey number 1, the host has to open door number 3. In our last case, if we chose the car, that means that the host can open either door number 2 or door number 3. Okay, so our goal here is, we want to find the probability, let's see. So we know that the probability that case 2 will happen and that door number 3 will be opened is going to be 1/3, because door number 3 has to be opened if case 2 is happening, right? And the chance that case 2 is happening is 1 out of 3, because there's only 3 possible choices. Okay, so now if we want to figure out the probability that case 3 is happening, and the little comma means and that door number 3 is being opened, we're going to be using our formula from before, right? So the probability, so that's going to be equal to the probability that we're in case 3, which is 1/3 because there's 3 different cases, multiplied by the probability that door number 3 is going to be open given that we're in case 3. So we know that we're in case 3, we only have 2 choices, right? Either door number 2 is going to be opened or door number 3 is going to be opened. So that means that the probability that door number 3 will be opened, given that we're in case 3, is going to be 1/2. Right? So multiplying those together, we've determined that the probability that we're in case 3 and that door number 3 is going to be opened is going to be 1/6. Everybody see that? Okay, cool. Okay, so now we also know that the probability of door number 3 being opened, right? So there's 4 different actions that the host will do, right? In case 1 opens the opens the second door, the second one opens the third, and in case 3 you can open either the second door or the third door. So the probability that the third door will be open is going to be 1/2. So if we want to determine the probability that we're in case 3 and that, or in that we're in case 3, given that the third door is open, right? What we're going to do is we're going to take the probability that we're in case 3 and the third door is open, and we're going to divide that by the probability that we're opening the third door. And that's, we're going to get 1/3. And so the probability that we're in case 3, given that we're opening door 3, that's representing we know that if we switch, that in case 3 and, let's see, the probability, sorry, I'm getting myself confused. Probabilities are so confusing, you guys. Okay. We know that the probability that we're in case 3 and that we are going to be winning is only going to happen 1/3 of the time. And I'm getting myself confused. Did anybody figure out a good way to use conditional probability when you guys were working on it?
That's just the probability of not swapping and winning.
It's the probability of not swapping and winning.
Because you're in case 3, that means you chose 1 and you won, right? You chose case 1, which had a car behind it, and you didn't switch and you won.
Right.
That is the, what you've calculated there, that's one number 3, which is the probability of winning a car without swapping.
Right. Okay, yeah, so we know that if we choose, yeah, if we're in case 3, so that is the probability that we have 1 and we don't switch. So we're sticking with our car. And so that only happens 1/3 of the time. Yeah, Aaron?
I was just going to say, isn't the answer the same if you just sub out 3 there for 2?
Yeah, it wouldn't matter because the number, because half the time the host is going to open door 2 and half the time he's going to open door 3. Yeah, so it wouldn't matter either way. So it's really the probability that you're in case 3, so that's the probability that you're going to be choosing the car and sticking with it. The host can open either door 2 or door 3.
Right.
Exactly. It's not what?
It's not directly the number that we calculate, right? Ultimately, we want to know the probability of winning, which simply depends on whether we're in case 3.
It depends on.
So, is it true that the thing you're calculating is the probability that you are in case 3, given that that was still in case 3?
Yes. So, right. So if we're in case 3, that's the case where we have 1, because we're assuming that we're not switching. So if we're assuming that we're not switching, the only case that we're going to win is in case 3.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Yeah, sorry for being unclear about that. Yeah, so if we're assuming we're not switching, the only case we're going to win is when we're in case 3, because we've chosen the car.
Okay.
right? And so, yeah, it wouldn't have mattered if we'd said open door 3 or open door 2 because it's still 50-50 with which door the host will open. Because he can't open our door, right? But, yeah.
This just shows you the formula for why you have a one-third chance of winning. Pick and stick.
If you pick, exactly, yeah. So if you pick and stick with your choice, you're going to have a one-third chance of winning because of this. And it is kind of related to which case you're going to be in. And so there's kind of that extra step there if you're thinking about it in that sense. Yeah? Any other comments or questions? Yeah?
It seems almost intuitive because it's so easy to put together a theoretical matrix of your possibilities and see, oh, obviously, if I pick a donkey first, I'm going to win. And that gives me a two-thirds chance of winning if I switch. But I mean, just looking at the table, my question would be: would it be less intuitive if there was one more door?
If there was a fourth door.
That would just simply reduce the. That would just simply reduce the chances. You'd still be better off switching.
You would still be better off switching, but not as good. Not as better off.
But then you have another choice of which one you're switching to. Because you have two more that you can switch to. More cases that you can take.
Yeah, there would be a lot more cases to look at. Yeah, so the problem would grow. You could like expand this problem to having 100 doors and see what happens. It gets really complicated, but if you make this table or you make some sort of tree, it makes it a lot easier. So like looking at this, it seems a little obvious. Well, if I stuck with the car, it wouldn't be as great, right? So if you stuck with your choice, it wouldn't be as great because you can only choose the car one out of three times, right? Did anybody have an idea of why it matters that the host is not allowed to open your door? Yeah?
Because if he opened your door and it wasn't the car, then you would automatically know the switch. But if you already chose your door, you would automatically know the switch.
It would also increase your chances to half instead of the floor. Well, less of a chance. Less of a chance.
Right, yeah? Right, so what would our probabilities of winning be if he was allowed to open our door? It'd be 50-50 now, right? Because essentially, that would mean that our choice at the beginning did not matter at all. Whatever door we chose at the beginning, it could care less because he's going to open one of the goat doors. And so in the end, right, we're going to have two options of doors, and whatever we chose at the beginning was really meaningless.
But he wouldn't open your door.
Right.
So your chances of winning are still higher at the switch, although they're relatively they're higher, but not by as much as with him always opening one of the other doors, right? Because he's not going to open your door if you have chosen a car, right? So.
Right. But it's still going to end up that your chances are 50-50.
Can you draw that formula on the board? Why that works that way?
Why it doesn't matter if he's allowed to open your door? Okay. So, let's see. So, I think essentially the thing is, so we have to think about the independence and dependence again. So if he is allowed to open your door, right? Did it really matter what you chose in the first place? Do those events depend on each other in any sort of way? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, if we want to talk about this more, we can do it afterwards. Thank you guys so much for coming. I know Karen has a few last things to say for us.
Yeah, just a couple of things. Thank you so much for coming out. Let's thank Sarah. It was wonderful to have her.
Thanks, guys.
And then last things, our next event will be a Saturday morning mass group. So that'll be Saturday, November 23rd, which is in 2 weeks, so Saturday before Thanksgiving. And then also, if you borrowed one of our pencils or colored pencils or crayons, if you could drop it on that table on the way out, that would be wonderful. Yeah.
All right.
Feel free to stay and come up if you want to talk about
it. Yeah, if you guys want to talk about it, I'd be more than happy to talk about it. Yeah.
So the way I did it was just I looked at the no swap, and the chance of winning with no swap, probability of a goat is 2/3, probability of a car is 1/3.
Mm-hmm.
So probability of both happening, I just multiply them together, right? 2/3 times 1/3.
To find.
So if you do a probability of, like, the probability of B given A is the probability of A and B happening.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, they can't both happen, right? But I just said the probability of both happening, just like if you have heads and tails, the chance of both of them happening is this times that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I took 2/3 times 1/3, got 2/9, over the probability of A, which in this case would be losing, would be the 2/3.
Mm-hmm.
And then I flip it, multiply, and I come up with 1/3. So the chance of winning with no swap is 1/3. Does that make sense? Or
your original chance of, P and A. So you're saying